all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. From our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And good morning and welcome. This is Up North News Radio. It's nice to have you along. I'm Pat Kreitlow. As you know, we're talking during this holiday season, end of the year, about so many of the different stories and guests that we've covered throughout 2023. If you're not a regular listener, then you may not know that most Fridays at 7:30, we talk to our friend Mark Jacob, a former editor at the Chicago Tribune. He's an author. He helps us talk about the way the media is covering the big stories today, especially given some of the weak spots in the media to report on right-wing extremism. He also writes a newsletter that you can get at couriernewsroom.com. And so we'll cover a lot of ground over the next few minutes here with our friend Mark Jacob. Mark, thanks for being here. Happy holiday season, an early Happy New Year. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Hey, you know, let's start just with a little bit of background first, because again, people's schedules are all over the place and maybe they're catching one of your segments here for the first time. And so I always like to start with essentially your social media bio that says, now allowed to have opinions. Why are you now allowed to have opinions, and why do you feel the need to share them so?
Well, they've been building up for, you know, four decades, really. I was in, you know, straight news media in Chicago area for 35 years at the Chicago Sun-Times and at the Chicago Tribune, you know, trying to, obviously couldn't take sides and tried to be fair to everyone, worked on investigations of Republicans, worked on investigations of Democrats. Made the current Illinois governor, J.B. Pritzker, very angry with stories we did about him. So it's not like, I'm some, you know, wacky leftist who has been hiding in mainstream media for 35 years. I tried to be, you know, straight up, you know, cover them, get the facts out and do all that. And I left the Tribune 5 years ago and went into freelance writing. And to some extent, it did liberate me to be clearer about my, you know, political thinking in social media and this new newsletter, stopthepresses.news. And the thing about it, Pat, it's not, I don't think I changed as much as the political atmosphere changed. You know, I look back on in like the 90s, for example, and a lot of the scandals were Republican and Democratic scandals. Some of them were mostly Democratic scandals, you know, Abscam and Keating Five. There's a lot of corruption in politics, period, and across both parties. But, you know, sometime in the last few decades, and especially, you know, supercharged by Donald Trump, the Republican Party became a dangerous force in America. And, you know, being not working for a supposedly objective news outlet and just being able to say what I thought, I decided to say what I thought on social media. And that is that the Democratic Party is the alternative to what is a dangerous force in our society, and that's the Republican Party. I'm not even a Democrat. I'm an independent. You know, I just mostly these days vote for Democratic candidates because they're the ones stopping the rise of fascism.
I think that if I ever could go back and look at press coverage over the decades, I'm sure I would find people who said this. They said, you know, Ronald Reagan and some of these others are running that government is bad, that government is broken, and that it's a slippery slope from saying government is broken today to government is always broken and maybe we should just finish breaking it and finish breaking democracy. I wouldn't doubt that there's somebody on there. And do you feel like they'd have a big, I told you so right now, the difference between short-term skepticism versus long-term damage to democracy, and not just, by the way, from politicians, but from media who thrive on skepticism.
Right, right. Well, and I've written a newsletter about that very subject. It's interesting you bring that up because, I quote the famous Reagan line where he says, you know, the nine most frightening words in the English language are, "We're the media, we're here to help." And, you know, which a ha-ha laugh line and all that. But the fact of it is, you know, obviously Reagan wasn't talking about there are a lot of good things that government does. I mean, government, you know, rescues people whose ships are sinking and, you know, off the coast. Government, like, made us put seatbelts on, which saved many, many lives. I mean, there are things that government does that make us safe and that prevent corporations from, you know, polluting streams and help us after hurricanes. It's not like, you know, a rational media would look at, you know, would go both ways. If the government's doing bad things, say it. But if the government's doing good things, say that too. And I feel like that the problem these days, to some extent, is that the media they're reflexively negative. And especially, you know, here with Biden in office, and Biden is kind of a, you know, quietly competent in a lot of ways. You know, his foreign policy, his ability to get everyone in NATO together to defend Ukraine, many subjects, he's quietly competent, and the news media don't like that. They feel like that's a boring story to write if you're going to write, well, the government, you know, got everything together and did it right this time. They'd much rather seize on the problems. And you know, and I get that. I was in the media, and it is, you know, boring. You're not going to write a story that says, you know, no jetliners crashed today. I mean, you're not. So to some extent, you do focus on the negative or something that's unusual that never happened before. That's the definition of news. But the scary thing these days is that tendency of the media has been seized upon by right-wing extremists to help denigrate the very idea that government can help. And clearly government can help, and they don't want it. You know, if Biden's in charge, everything's terrible, oh, he's doing horrible things. And then you get this New York Times approach where every headline, New York Times hates good news. I mean, they refuse to report it mostly. They, you know, you have this situation where they'll even write stories about how the economy is booming, and they'll say, well, the economy is booming, but that makes people jittery. You know, they'll say stuff like that. You know, in that newsletter piece, I pointed out that if the New York Times, I was surprised the New York Times after the last Super Bowl didn't write a headline that said, Chiefs win Super Bowl, increasing pressure on them to repeat next year. You know, I mean, this idiotic kind of spin they've got to do to kind of turn good news into bad news. And that the right wing loves it and uses it all the time. And the scary thing also about that is they would go way beyond what the news does and, you know, make up lies. Say, you know, that the economy's bad and, you know, or that Biden is, you know, should be impeached because he's done some conspiracy we can't prove, you know, stuff like that, to where they're also trying to manufacture negativity by, you know, by blocking funding, by having us worry about a shutdown all the time, by increasing the chaos in our community and in our country. And that's, you know, that's a well-worn fascist tactic, is to increase chaos and to bill yourself as the solution to the chaos. And they're doing it. That's what they do.
When it comes to how the media is reporting so many things today, I just get the impression sometimes that they want to be your friend. They want, you know, if it's not for ratings or for revenue, it's just to, you know, convey a tone. And what I'm getting at is the difference between reporting on, say, economic data versus feels. And it's easier to report. People don't feel like the economy is going really well, as opposed to, I mean, are they afraid that they'll look elitist if they actually report the data of how well things are going?
I think they're afraid that they're going to, this is, I've seen this instinct in journalism my whole career, where you don't really want to say the government's doing a good job or that something's being handled, because it kind of makes you seem to some people like a cheerleader for government officials. And the last thing, you know, journalists want to do is look like they're in bed with the government. And they shouldn't be in bed with the government, but they should report the facts. And so this causes this friction. And that, therefore, they don't want to say flat out that something is being done successfully. And, you know, and this idea of, that's where the feelings thing comes from. And to me, the fact that they are going to report on feelings instead of facts is a huge part of the problem, you know, because right now, you know, you do get this giant gap in the polls between what's actually happening and what the polls say people think about the economy. And the thing about the news media that just blows my mind is you keep on getting, you know, anchors on TV say, well, why is there this dislocation between what is being reported, what people think, and what the facts are? Why is economic news so good, but the people's feelings about the economy so bad? And the answers are, there are two answers, MAGA and media. Those are the two answers, that Republicans are going to lie about it all the time, you know, and that the media lets them lie and keeps on reporting about feelings instead of facts.
And then you throw in either the diversions or the smoke screens. And in this case, I'm talking about both the Hunter Biden case and the Biden impeachment probe, although there doesn't seem to be anything that's being probed. But how challenging is it going to be for media outlets to report on Hunter Biden and or Biden impeachment in proper context?
I think they're going to fail. I mean, they've been failing so far. I mean, you know, you can, it's happening. So you've got to report that there's, you know, this push toward an impeachment inquiry and all this stuff. But they've been, the right wing, this, that goof, James Comer, keeps on going on TV and exposing the fact that he doesn't have any evidence, but it doesn't matter. He's going to keep on going on Fox News and they're not going to ask the hard questions. Occasionally he'll go on, you know, some show like Jake Tapper or MSNBC, and they will ask the hard questions. But I haven't seen Comer on MSNBC. I think he's afraid of the questions. So, it's going to be hard because you have to report it. It's happening. But what media should do is really prominently say, you know, despite the lack of evidence, the Republicans are doing this or whatever. And there is, they don't have the evidence. They have evidence of Hunter Biden doing bad things, which to me is just, has completely convinced me that Hunter Biden should not be president. I am opposed to Hunter Biden running for president. I think he'd be bad for our country as president. I refuse to support Hunter Biden for president.
Except that he has never been a candidate, but you wouldn't know that looking at some media outlets. Mark Jacob is our guest for this morning. We will continue the conversation here in just a moment. But first, a reminder that the Badger football season is not done yet. The Badgers will be playing a bowl game on New Year's Day, the ReliaQuest Bowl in Tampa, Florida. That's Raymond James Stadium taking on LSU, and that game will be on some of the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network. Check the website civicmedia.us for details. Back in just a bit. You're up next. Welcome back. We're continuing our conversation with Mark Jacob, author, former editor at the Chicago Tribune, as we talk about some of the ways that the media has covered big stories this year, and especially in the Trump era. Now, Mark, it wasn't that long ago that the now former Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, was interviewed by Robert Costa about Trump's authoritarianism. And McCarthy's response just kind of floored me when he said, well, I don't see it that way. But you do look at the polling, you look at the support that's still out there for Donald Trump, and I guess we have to, I have to put the onus on you for a second, Mark, on behalf of everybody who's not a Trump fan. Why do you see authoritarian tendencies? What do you see in Trump and his minions that Kevin McCarthy doesn't see or won't see? And why is it so hard for some reporters and editors and others in media to acknowledge the traits that allow him to joke about being dictator for a day?
Right. Well, there's no question that Trump poses an existential threat to our democracy. I mean, and it comes out of his own mouth. I mean, he or his fingers when he types, because on Truth Social, he declared a year ago that he was for termination of the Constitution, or at least the parts he didn't like. He used the word termination. I mean, is that not a clear enough signal to people that he's a problem? And then he says the old, well, I want to be dictator for a day. Nobody wants to be dictator for a day. Dictators, once they've been dictator for a day, they're going to try a second day and a third and a fourth. I mean, frankly, you know, this idea of term limits for dictators is absurd. And, you know, here there in Wisconsin, you know, you've dealt with you have a senator there who, remember, he promised that he wouldn't run for a third term, and now he's serving his third term. So this idea that, you know, well, I'm just going to be here for a short period of time and then, you know, everything will be fine, that it's absurd. And you start seeing aspects of the mainstream news media coming around to it and, you know, and seeing that this guy is dangerous. I mean, he's totally dangerous. He wants to shoot shoplifters or suspected shoplifters. Nobody's charged him with a crime or anything. He wants to shoot them right in the store if somebody thinks they're shoplifting. And, you know, I mean, he's suggested the execution of General Milley. I mean, he's talked about sending the military into America's cities uninvited to do whatever. I mean, it couldn't be more dangerous. This guy is acting like, you know, like every scary dictator in our history. And if you study history, you know that's scary.
I immediately thought of Duterte in the Philippines, who right away you had, you know, basically, you know, the police were out shooting everybody on site as they were. But he was elected. The guy in Hungary was elected. Putin ostensibly was elected.
Right.
People say it can't happen here, they're wrong.
Right. And this idea that they were elected too. I mean, you know, in Hungary, you know, they don't have fair elections anymore. The media is completely dominated, you know, by the dictator, you know, and in Russia, those are not real elections. The people who decide to run against Putin end up in prison. And so it's just the trappings of democracy without real democracy. And if Trump, I honestly believe that if Trump gets elected this time, it'll may very well be the last fair election in American history. And they'll have elections, you know, well, we'd have a 2028 election, but, you know, who knows what would happen to the opposition, whether they would even be able to be shown on television. I mean, this guy, and the thing that's so mind-blowing about this is that this is not a mystery. This is not some sort of secret plan that Donald Trump has. This is him announcing on video what he wants to do, that he wants to be a dictator. He's using the word dictator and saying that's a good thing. He wants to be one. And so it's just what it really is time for people in the media and the general public to wake up and say that this can't happen, that we just can't let this happen for our kids and our grandkids, for the future, for what this country's like in 30 years.
If you could be a consultant to media outlets who you know are going to be around a lot of Republican candidates at all levels, what in your mind is the most important thing that newsrooms need to know when they're asking questions or covering Republicans in 2024?
All right. Well, that's really important. Number one, if they're Trump supporters, you have to ask them to align with the things that Trump says and does. And, you know, they like to, the truth is that the entire Republican Party, almost to a person, has just folded on any decency. They have, the politicians have decided it's good for my future to support a criminal. That's what they've decided in their head. And therefore, they will align with Trump, but it's tougher for them when you ask them specific individual questions. You know, if you want to ask a Trumper in Wisconsin, well, do you want to send the military into Milwaukee? Do you want to send it into Madison? What exactly are you in favor of? If you ask them questions that make them either have to deny or agree with what Trump says, you put them in a box. You put them in a tough place. And they'll try to weasel out. They'll try to not answer the question. And this is part two of how to deal with Republicans when you're asking them questions. You don't let them weasel out of it. They'll immediately start turning, well, that makes me think about the border, or that makes me think about, you know, they will go on to something else. And you don't let them. You say, well, no, let me ask you this question one more time. Are you in favor of this? And then they'll try to weasel out again. And Pat, so often in the last, you know, 5 years, people have been able to weasel out. They've been able to, you know, the media gets tired, oh, we've run out of time and all that stuff. And you can't let them do it. You have to keep on asking it. And if they won't answer it after like maybe three or four times, what you do is you turn to your audience and say, well, this politician has refused to answer my question, which I just asked him for time. He's not answering the question. So I guess we'll either have to move on or we'll have to stop the interview. I mean, you have to be confrontational. That's the thing about that I wrote recently, is that fact-checking is not enough. Fact-crusading is where we have to go. We have to confront people who want to lie to us and not let them lie to us. And clearly, Republicans want all the benefit, Republican politicians want all the benefits of aligning with Trump, which is not having primary opponents and fundraising from, you know, right-wing rich people. But they don't want any of the responsibility, or they don't want to own it, all the horrible, negative, hateful things that Trump says and does.
Tell folks again how they can get your newsletter.
It's stopthepresses.news, N-E-W-S. Just go to there and you can subscribe. It's free. It comes out about weekly. I sometimes do something called Media Misses, which is a short, maybe like 6 minute, a video with Stephen Beschloss, who writes a newsletter called America America. So that, you know, that'll be out there as well.
Something everybody should see. And Mark does some columns that you can find through couriernewsroom.com as well. Mark, I've appreciated it all year long. Have a great holiday season. Happy New Year to you. And we'll talk in January.
You too, Pat. And good best wishes to your audience.
Coming up next, we're going to talk to Dr. Kristen Lierley and her son, who's going to represent a new generation as we head toward a new year. That's next. You're up north.
Jingle all the way. It is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Judging and jingle, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse, in a one-horse open sleigh.
Welcome back to Up North News Radio. Our little holiday party here continues. Rather than focusing on Christmas, we're going to focus on New Year's now. We did not have the New Year's baby available, so we found the next best thing representing the next generation, and happens to be the favorite child of our own Dr. Lierley.
Indeed.
Kristen, he must be the favorite child, because that's what he wrote on screen there for his title, Lindsay L., favorite child. Can you confirm?
I can confirm that he wrote most of that, but then you spell checked it for him.
Wow. Right away, throwing your son under the bus.
Okay.
I see how this is going.
No more Mother's Day present for you.
Yep. Well, you still got to get her a Christmas present. By the way, what'd you get your mom for Christmas?
No, I can't tell you that.
Oh, see, now, yeah, okay, good. He passed that test. Honestly, we weren't going to continue this interview if you already fessed up to that. So, Kristen, how are the boys, all four of those boys, on gift giving?
You know, actually, they give really well thought out gifts that are usually pretty funny. So Christmas has turned into this like very funny. It's like less about, you know, getting a really expensive, like desired gift, and more about this is something I thought would be hilarious. So there's a lot of laughter.
A lot of the times we'll find that as the year progresses, the gifts change owners. Currently, a wireless phone charger that I bought her is in the possession of Craig, her boyfriend, that he uses every night.
And my slippers are in your room.
And a mouse pad that I got for Julian is now my mouse pad. Mm-hmm.
So we hope you enjoyed the socialism hour here with the Lively household.
There's a lot of sharing that happens here.
That's a very good thing. Kristen, you know, we could talk all day about, you know, things we talked about during the year, but as you thought it would be good to check in with the youth of America as we turn the calendar on another year, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, Beloit College used to put out this poll every year that would talk about what is the college class, the freshman college class that's coming up. What are they thinking about to help us relate to them? Because Pat, it's been a while since you've been in college. Me too.
It's been a long while since, yes. And so now they, Beloit College doesn't do it anymore, but Marist puts a little something together now, and they did something for the college class of 2027. And note a few things here. And Kristen, at some point, if you either want to throw him questions about this or get his reaction, let's take a look at a couple of these things. For example, the class of 2027, the iPhone, their lifelong sidekick, was born the same year they were.
I'd like to think that, given my prolonged use of my iPhone, that I know how it works, but every once in a while it throws me a curveball and I just have no idea how to react. That's how I learned that if a phone gets too hot, it'll just shut off. So like that, why? The battery
Look at the lesson we can apply to that. If something gets too hot, it just shuts down. Kristen, let's talk about hot flashes and,
you
know, the irritation.
You went there.
Wouldn't it be great if you could just go, no, I'm having a moment. I'm just going to power down for a little while.
No, let's talk about hot flashes. Let's talk about him for the rest of the segment.
Oh, no. You love your son. And we
I come here to get away from the doctor talk, and it just goes right back into doctor talk.
Can we talk a little bit about what life would be like without an iPhone, though? Because Pat and I grew up with this thing called encyclopedias. So when we needed to know something, we would dig into, you know, a series of books that may or may not have the answer that we were looking for. Whereas you just pull a computer out of your pocket and immediately you know all the answers. And it's always been that way for you.
I can definitely say that having everything at my fingertips, like, that's very nice. If I didn't have a Maps app, I think I'd get lost every day. I don't know if I'd know how to get to school without a Maps app. But, you know, I have the encyclopedia is nice. If Bubba's ever wrong about something, I can just type up the real definition of
the word.
So
you have used one. You're familiar with an encyclopedia.
Indeed.
Okay.
Here's an online encyclopedia or a book encyclopedia?
I'm not at the liberty to disclose.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Let's try this again. There's been a massive attack on the grid. There is no internet. If you were to walk into a library, would you know how to find the information you need that you used to get off of Google?
Yes, kind of. It depends. They have that. I know that a lot of school libraries have a giant book that they keep in the relative front. Now it's a computer because it's cheaper to manage a computer.
Okay,
than it
but
is
the
to
computer, but
book.
The computer's gone.
Yes, so you find the big book. You flip it to the glossary page. You find exactly the subject you need, and then you cry because there's no internet to look at the phone you need.
Sure
I would give
crying,
up.
I'm sure
you, the moment you brought up the moment you brought up the grid going down, I was done. I'm just gonna go sit in a corner, eat some food, and wait.
Wait, I have a question. Do you know what Dewey Decimal is?
I'm aware of the Dewey Decimal System, yes.
Okay. You are? Have you ever
It's math. It? I still have to do math.
It's math?
No, it's a system for filing books in libraries.
Oh, we're talking about different things. Never mind. No, it's been so long since the Dewey Decimal System was brought up. I think I was a preschooler when that was brought up.
It is
We didn't even use it then.
I think I used it as a preschooler. I'm pretty sure that at that point I knew what it was that I wanted to be, you know, involved in. I would spend so much time in the 900 section, which was geography and history, which is where I wanted to be. How did I know that? I looked it up on Google really quick just now. Because there's if you think I really had the Dewey Decimal System memorized, you've got another thing coming. Binge watching. Here's another thing that the Marist List has, is that binge watching is just another regular weekend, whereas for us, I mean, do you remember the first time, Kristen, you could watch more than like 3 episodes of something in a row?
I still am not a binge watcher because I can't sit down that long. My attention just goes somewhere else. But Lindsay really learned how to binge watch during COVID. Like at the very beginning, he completely destroyed The Office front to back 2 times in a row.
2 times, 4 times. Put some respect on my name.
And yet you kept your grades up, he said, hopefully.
No. Okay. Not the slightest, no.
All right.
I tanked freshman year of high school, dude. That was not a good year.
We are still looking for signs of hope in the next generation here. Let's see what else we can find.
I consider myself bright. I just didn't. The office took priority over school.
Okay.
He's got a great redemption story essay that's going to be his college essay.
Here's hoping. has the luster worn off of binging? Do we know? I mean, do we think people still sit down and crank out, you know, 6 episodes of something a night?
I feel like it depends on the person. Like I kind of ran out of stuff to watch that's good. I watched a bunch of really good movies and I watched a bunch of good shows, but now it's just kind of, if something's on the TV, I'll sit down for it. But there are people who make it, who can get paid to just sit on their couch and watch episodes of a TV show. And honestly, I strive to be them.
Speaking of streaming, did you know that Netflix, before it was a streaming service, mailed DVDs to your house for you to watch?
I brought this up last night. I find it weird that as the younger generation gets older, the older generation seems to think that we kind of just didn't or don't know what like VHS was or DVDs. Like I know
the Dewey Decimal System.
Or the Dewey Decimal System. I know in our old minivan we had this giant black like binder that was just filled with like thousands of CDs and we only ever used 2 of them. And it was like Sinbad, Lion King, and Beetlejuice. And those were the
And Ratatouille.
Three. That was another big one. Mm-hmm. I think Ferris Bueller's Day Off was in there and I got curious, but it was the most boring movie I've ever watched.
Watch it now.
Wait, did he just say Ferris Bueller was a boring movie?
What's the plot of Ferris Bueller?
Wait a minute. When you're a kid, when you're 5, it doesn't matter. But like when you're 17, I think you'd like it now.
I think you should watch it now. I think you might have a new appreciation. Okay, in your world, social media platforms have always existed, but obviously they haven't all existed equally. In your generation, as it were, what has been the life cycle of social media platforms? What did you start with that you no longer use anymore? And what's the latest and greatest?
Oh, it's been a consistent flow of like the same 4. Facebook was really big still when I was a kid. And then now it's like old people who are really susceptible to like marketing scams. Then Snapchat, Instagram, and Twitter came in, and those 3 have just kind of been like the top 3 for the longest time. Twitter dropped off real bad after it became X. Instagram went way high up after picking up all the traffic from Twitter, and then TikTok came in. And currently, I think TikTok would be the leader. You can find anything on TikTok, whether it's misinformation or just like a talking fish. That's one of my favorites.
I was about to ask, are you an influencer, a content creator, or just a junkie who just watches things over and over and adds nothing of value to the chain?
Oh, I can prove that I'm a junkie. How do you look at screen time on your phone? It's bad. I'm just going to type in screen time.
I just don't feel
just
like
this.
Know,
for me.
This is not reflecting well on Dr. Lyerly at all.
If we look back at my past usage of this phone, all of this happens either during the school day or in the morning when I don't want to go to school.
Oh, this is not so
good. I spent 2 hours on TikTok today.
Kristen.
I spent 3 hours on TikTok yesterday. And I spent 7 hours on TikTok Sunday. So
yeah,
I'm a
junkie.
I just absorb.
I wasn't here. I was just completely gone. I wasn't parenting him at all during
That's what bad parents say. It's not my fault. I wasn't there for you.
How do you feel you're going to look back on these years, whether it's from an executive suite or a prison cell? I'm not sure which one. It could go either way at this point. Will you look back at this time and say, when I'm a parent, no child of mine will ever be allowed to watch TikTok? Or will it be as ubiquitous as, you know, the TV watching that we do nowadays?
I feel like TikTok and other social media is one of those things where you just got to set kind of a hard limit. Like, you can go on this, this, and this, but if I catch you looking at like stuff like this, phone's gone. Because it is, have you ever heard the term brain rot? It's content.
I don't know if you know, that's kind of the business plan of this show. So,
But yeah, no, it's just 80% of TikTok is mindless content that pumps out algorithmic stuff that kids soak up like sponges, and it sells, but it's not good.
So what have you trained your algorithm to do? What does it feed
you? Cat videos.
It feeds me cat videos, funny videos of the Vikings losing at football.
that's funny.
Lindsay, where's the world going in 2024? You represent our baby new year. And understand that there are people that have a lot of angst about the coming year. Can you, as somebody who's moving into the new generation of adults, bring any words of comfort to the rest of the adults as you come join us in our horribly dysfunctional playground?
I wouldn't say I'm not enthused to get my voice out there. It's more of just like a, wow, I have the chance to make real change in the world. And that's, you know, that's a lot. If I make the wrong decision, then that's a consequence for the next 4 years. And so it's just more of a, instead of just going out there and making my voice heard, it's putting pen to paper and really going, wow, this is the chance for me to really do something. And, you know, it gets scarier the more you think about it.
But, you know, to be fair, you and your colleagues, you and your classmates, I see them talking about things that are happening in the world, like issues. All I cared about when I was 17 was how big can I get my hair? You guys are talking about like real life things like climate change and reproductive rights and, you know, stuff that really matters in the world.
Well, I feel like back in your day, you were also holding up posters that said, "We like Ike." So, but yeah, no, given our increased access to worldwide information, it's really easy to learn. And instead of having to worry about, well, we still worry about less important stuff, like how big can we get our hair and how popular can I get? But we also have started realizing that things need to be fixed. And if we get a early head start on that, then it's easier than if we start late and regret.
Lindsay, I feel like we understand and appreciate your mom so much more. And we understand now why she enjoys talking with us and why she locks the door to the office when she comes and visits with us twice a week. It's nice that we give her some refuge, and it's nice that you give her a way to stay on her toes, shall we say. Lindsay, thank you so much.
Have a good one.
We'll be back right after this. You're up north. As we've said, while we're in the holiday season here, we're just going to kick back a little and be a little more conversational with some of our colleagues, our friends, our regulars. And so it's nice of Christina to take herself away from the gingerbread house or the tree decorating or whatever you're doing to be here. How are you, Christina?
I'm great. How are you, Pat?
Good, good. Now, are you, I know I'm traveling for the break. You're traveling at some point, or are you staying in the area?
Yes. Christmas for me is always with my family back in the Chicagoland area. So my mom and my brother are teachers, so their breaks always coincide with this. So it's nice that our company gives us some time off to spend with our families too. And then dad'll take a few days off as well. And we just have some good old family fun. I don't know. Do you guys have any like specific family traditions that you do every year? Because what my family always looks forward to is that we save our annual viewing of the movie Elf for all together. So, you know, it's hard to hold off because it's on TV a million times.
Yes.
So I'm just itching to find out what Buddy's up to, but I'm looking forward to that.
We have done something kind of like that where when we're together, we'll watch White Christmas for sure. So we grab something that's relatively old. And then Elf is my daughter's favorite, both of my daughters. And so we'll watch that. And then I think to humor dad, they sit and watch me watch Muppet Christmas Carol because I'm, you know, I'm just all in on all things Muppets. So the business at hand here, as you know, we talk to Christina most Tuesdays about what's in the newsletter. So we're wrapping up another year of newsletters. Can we brag a little bit first? And I say that only because the newsletter is now coming up on its fourth birthday. And when it started, its circulation was 6. There were 6 of us in the room at the time when I hit send on the first edition. How are we doing these days?
We've really, really grown. I think that we're nearing 150,000.
When we mention it a couple of times every morning, it's to get everybody over there. But for folks who haven't done that yet, again, head over to upnorthnewswi.com and you can do just that. And one of the end of the year stories that you're working on and have published to the website, and I'm sure this is coming up in the newsletter as well, is the three ways that Wisconsin politics changed for the better in 2023. And obviously, your angle on so much here is it's a big, nasty world out there. How do we find the positive that's in there? And so there are people who don't think in terms of how politics changed for the better. You went and found that with these examples. Tell the folks about what you found for this year's edition of that article.
Yeah, you know, Pat, that positivity is such a big part of our brand, and then just what I'm personally trying to bring to Up North News, because you can go just about anywhere and find all of the bad things with our country and even our state. And the disillusioning part for me is that you don't really have to look hard to find the good. People just aren't talking about it as much, because I guess maybe it's not as interesting to some people. But there are a lot of ways that Wisconsin politics really did change for the better in 2023. I mean, obviously, the most obvious is the state Supreme Court flipping for the first time in more than a decade, and obviously at a pivotal time in our state and our country too, with the latest abortion rulings ahead of the election, redrawing maps, making them more fair so your vote actually will count. That was at the top of our list of, you know, the number one way Wisconsin politics changed for the better. But also on there is that young voters are turning out in record numbers, especially in Wisconsin. For example, if we look back at the November 2022 gubernatorial election, while Governor Evers won 56% of the La Crosse students' vote in that election, this past April, Protasiewicz, in a Supreme Court race, obviously much less eyes on that than the typical governor race, she won 75% of the vote. And that is just a testament to students realizing that their vote does matter and coming out. And then also third on our list of the top three ways Wisconsin politics changed for the better is that state Republicans and Democrats really did find some common ground. Most recently, obviously, securing that deal to keep the Brewers here through 2050. And when I say, I do want to put a little asterisk here, because I think a lot of these do require sometimes a little bit more Democrat action than Republicans here, but we need to celebrate the wins where we can get them.
We are visiting this morning with my Up North News colleague, Christina Laurie, who puts together the daily newsletter here. So the things that you've worked on include, of course, a summary of some of the most popular stories of 2023. So to a degree, we're kind of, infringing on Sherita's turf here, because once a week, Sherita tells us about the most popular social media stories of the past week. But because you put together the newsletter and see pretty much everything, you've been able to watch the year fly by and help us understand what were some of the most read stories, whether it's on the newsletter or the website overall. And there's a lot of them here. So when I ask for your favorite, I don't mean that it was necessarily the most popular, but if you were going to pick one story as emblematic of our 2023 coverage, what would it be?
That is a really, really tricky question. Mm-hmm. I mean, the easy cop out here would be, I would direct people to this article that I just published that is literally called Wisconsin's Most Popular Stories of 2023, because then you have 25 different stories all linked within there of our really, we called it the best of the rest. So it's stories, you know, that didn't fit into a particular category. So we couldn't label them as definitively political or definitively about education or climate change or business. This is just like the best of the fun stuff. My personal favorite story that I worked on, just because I know this young woman who has been working so hard to launch her own business. She quit her corporate job during the pandemic and she moved to, she lives in the Madison area, and she opened this business called Miggy Bakes. and she just specializes in, she started with just decorating and making cakes for people, but now she makes just about anything, any dessert, you know, great bars, cookies, even edible dough. She sells everything, and she opened her first brick and mortar shop in Middleton, just which, if you don't, you know, aren't from this area, just directly outside of Madison. And that's actually her hometown. So she owns a bake shop in her hometown. How cool is that? It was just really neat to follow her journey, because I first met her at the beginning of COVID when I was working at a local TV station here. And this was just a dream. She had worked at Epic, which is a giant company here, a very corporate job. And she made the leap of faith. No health insurance guarantee, you know, no 401k protection. She bet on herself, and it really paid off. So that's always great.
For all of these best things, of course, head over to upnorthnewswi.com and the newsletter that's put together by Christina Laurie. Have a wonderful holiday season, a happy new year, and we'll do this for another year come January.
Yes, see you in 2024, Pat.